We're snorting cap rates and shooting up cash flow here at Deal Junkie. Welcome back to Deal Junkies. We are excited to give you this follow-up episode with Mr. Paul Curley. We had a great episode with him, and now we want to talk a little bit more about deals. We want to talk about, Trevor loves to talk about bad deals. We like to hear about pain.
I like to talk about good deals.
What is that called when you like people to be in pain? Is that masochism?
Yes. Or
is that the right word?
He masochism? Doesn't like to talk about good deals. Trevor specifically told me, I want to know when you're in pain.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, I'm trying to learn from your experiences. But.
Oh, okay. Oh, you want to learn? You just want to learn about the bad. You're trying to learn from the bad.
Yeah, you learn more from the bad than
the
good.
But if all of our bad stories are about getting out of our lane, can we actually learn from a bad deal other than stay in your lane?
That's probably the first lesson right there.
That's the big.
That sums it up.
Yeah.
So, okay. So, quick introductions. I'm Gabe Johansson here with Mike Nuss, Trevor Howard, and our special guest today, Paul Curley. We're going to talk about a deal you did. You mentioned it in the last episode. You talked about how you went and borrowed money. You had a sugar daddy, which Mike calls a loan shark. He was loaning you money at 12%. No points or just?
No points.
No points.
No paperwork.
No paperwork. It had a million.
No security.
If there's no paperwork, that is a shark.
So there's a I love it. Can we go find another guy?
I didn't
like
have
this?
To put up security. I just.
Is he still alive?
12% seems cheap to me. Why do you call him a loan shark?
Especially back then. I know. Yeah.
That is pretty cheap. So he gave you $1 million line of credit to use however you wish, no paperwork at 12%.
Well, and it's like Mike says, I got all out of my lane. I encountered this developer who had all of these lots, and he needed a partner. And this guy was, he would add two and two together and come up with 3.5. Now, it's close, but it just isn't right. But everything he did was 3.5. And we're building houses and selling houses and lots and all. And nothing worked because it was all pie in the sky.
So there's another bad partnership.
But bottom line, he believed it was 3.5. That's what made him so incredibly dangerous. He believed it.
Can I ask you about this partner? Was he super confident?
Oh boy, was he confident.
Like no doubt whatsoever?
No doubt. It was 3.5.
Interesting.
Oh man, it was amazing.
I love how you explain that as well. There's a guy that's been talking about a deal recently in one of my circles, and I just get these vibes of you've never done a successful deal, and it's the same vibes your guy gave you, the same vibes you're kind of talking about right now, and now I see it because I've just heard your story, so you do get value from these.
Well, yeah. Trevor had to make that mistake, though. He didn't learn this one from
Gabe
us. From
told me not to, Gabe told me not to do something. I did it anyway, and I learned.
So I have to say that this is one thing that's a red flag for me is the like confident beyond a shadow of a doubt confident, like 100% confident, scares the shit out of me. Those people, like, there's got to be 1% of like, well, I'm almost 100% sure, but there's always that chance, right? But the ones that's 100% positive, run.
I even caught myself writing an email the other day, changing the word to I'm confident. You know, I believe, I'm not sure. And yeah, and having this level of confidence, that's how you're going to mess up the biggest, because now you've lost awareness.
So what was this deal? It was a $1.2 million. Like, what is this deal?
It was a bunch of bare lots.
Okay.
And you got bare land that we were going to develop into bare lots and then put houses on them. Modular houses. It gets even crazier when you look at it, but sure sounded good. And he believed it.
How'd you meet this developer partner?
It was beside some property I had in Roseburg.
Okay, so guy's your neighbor.
Yeah.
Says, I got a cool idea. And he roped you in.
Yes.
Okay. And so you said, yeah. So you went out and raised the money. So he probably knew he saw that you were the kind of guy that could probably were dumb enough to get into a deal with him, but good enough at raising money that you could go raise the money to do his pipe dream.
And of course, when our little venture filed bankruptcy, he just kind of disappeared. And it was just me left standing there to pay all this back.
So did he sign on this debt? I guess you said there's no paperwork. So it's just you and just you borrowing money to go into this guy's deal.
Yeah.
And okay. you paid it all back even though it went bad?
Well, yeah.
With interest? Yeah. All 12%?
Oh, yeah.
How long did it take you?
A year.
Oh, a year. That's a pretty good year to be able to pay back $1 million.
Yeah, at what point into your career were you at this? Did you own a bunch of units already?
I owned some units, yeah. At the time, I thought I had a lot going.
It took me 7 years to pay back my million. It didn't.
Well, it might have taken longer than that, but oh, man, what a heartache.
Trevor wants to see your pain right now. We want to relive this experience with you.
No, you don't. Your turn will come.
And there is never even real pain, right? It's because at the end, the pain's gone. Your example, they're one of your great money lenders now. Your lender, maybe not. I was talking to a friend, went through the same thing, you know, just went through this really bad scenario and it took them a while to pay it back, but still you're making payments, you're having conversations, you're building rapport and they're watching you struggle and give them a check instead of go buy what maybe you need. And that forges a relationship that then can propel you forward.
And when I needed the money again, he loaned it to me.
Yeah.
So you preserved that.
Relationship.
That relationship with your money guy.
And my own self-worth.
So tell us where this deal went south.
That's probably even more important.
Well, yeah. It's
never thought of that, but yeah.
It's one thing to lose your own money. It's a whole different kind of stress to lose other people's money.
Yeah.
At least if you have a conscience, you know. For me anyway, I'm fine. If I lose my money, I lost my money and move on with life. It doesn't keep me up at night. But if I go borrow the money and lose it, it's not cool.
Well, even losing your self-worth is the worst out of all.
Oh my gosh. And your reputation and your relationships. There are things wrapped up in that far more valuable than the money itself. So tell us where you went wrong. I mean, Trevor asked where you're at in your investment cycle. You already own quite a bit of real estate. You're doing pretty well. What age are you when all this is happening?
Oh, it's been 30 years ago.
So you'd kicked it off. You're 10, 15 years into your investing career. And so you're still making mistakes.
I have a base.
So you learned early on you didn't like partners with the doctors. You went and partnered with your brother, who you had for quite a while. You said you were going to swear off partners. You told us in the last episode you were going to swear off partners.
Well, this was still early on. I was still had a little...
Yeah, but you said you're 15 years in, and Trevor's only 27 years old. So he's trying to learn these lessons so he doesn't have to wait and make a mistake 15 years from now.
He was so convincing. How could you go wrong? And he was... He had these lots. He wasn't doing it with stick-built homes. Do you really want to hear this?
Yeah, we want to hear it.
He was doing it with modular homes, Fuqua manufactured homes. He would bring a modular home and set it up, and it would look like the real thing. And he would add garages, and it was designed to put a garage on it. It was designed to put an overhanging porch, surround porches. When he got all done, he would set up this modular home cheaper than the stick-built home could be done, but it was built out of real building materials. It wasn't manufactured trailer cheap stuff. And I just thought that made too much sense. And of course, he believed it. But what I found, the banks didn't buy into it. The people buyers didn't buy into it. They wanted a discount for this modular home. So then, he had no concept about how to develop and build it out. So it cost more than it was worth to build, and then we couldn't sell it for what it was worth.
I remember going to an investor meetup with you a couple of years ago, and there was a group here in Salem that was trying to do something with like prefab metal framing to build homes, something like that. And I remember sitting there, and I was kind of impressed. I thought, man, this sounds kind of cool. This seems like the future of building buildings. And we walked out of there and you looked at me and you said, yeah, that's all bullshit. And I didn't understand exactly what you saw, but I'm wondering if this experience maybe is what taught you that
prefab is gonna save the world.
And that company didn't make it either. They went under, and that's a big lawsuit and bunch of drama around that. So okay, so you're definitely getting out of your lane. You're still in the real estate game, but you've got a guy comes to you with an idea. You're sort of being an investor in his idea, but you're out borrowing the money doing it. So when you were doing your own deals before this, were you out borrowing that money already, or is this the first time you borrowed the money from the guy?
I think it was the first time I borrowed the money from the guy.
So would you have ever met that guy if you had not done this deal?
No, I knew him from the trenches.
So
he sold a bunch of low income housing, and he had some extra money, and we were friends.
Okay, but this was the deal that made you go to him and say, "Hey, can I?" And he knew what you were doing.
Yeah.
Did he have see any red flags or see any problems with it? Or he didn't care.
He didn't care. All right. 100% interest.
Real quick for Trevor, how you expedite your exponential curve is you get lenders by buying real estate from them. You turn your sellers into lenders, and so now
that's the only thing I do right now.
Lending beyond that one deal you buy from them.
Oh, more deals.
Yeah, so not a seller carry deal. You buy it seller carry or what? But
and then you borrow the money that they put in their pocket.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So you turn that buying selling relationship into a lending borrowing relationship, and now you're on steroids.
And not just to do for that deal, but to do for future deals. Yeah. Recycle the capital. We always say that when we're paying a loan off, is how can we spend this money again? We want to recycle the capital.
This does take a life of its own. There's a magic there that just builds and builds.
So tell us, we're trying to dig down into where you went wrong. Like, is this, had you done other development projects before, or was this the first time you'd gotten into ground up building?
I don't remember.
Would you ever run an Excel sheet before this? I'm hearing that you just didn't run numbers.
Well, I did. In the early days, I did.
Okay.
Well, and you were going off of your partner's numbers of what he could build for and what he thought they would sell for.
Yeah.
And in the end, the market wasn't there. It didn't support your hypothesis of what the value would be at the end, nor did the debt market support it for the home buyers to come in and buy it. So you built a product you thought was as good or superior to what the competition was building, but the market said otherwise. They said, no, this is something new. We don't understand it. And you didn't get, so there was really no due diligence. There wasn't like, we built one and we proved the concept that we built it for 20% cheaper and we sold it for the same price. This is just, I got a new idea. Let's go test it out. And they tested it out on the money you went and borrowed.
Well, and he had built a couple of them and they looked good. And he was telling me how smart he was.
Did he? He hadn't sold them though.
But I think he, if I remember right, he had, and it had a big walk around porch to a garage, and you couldn't tell it. It was just pretty remarkable.
So, did you not check his financials? Did he give you so much confidence that you were just didn't dot I's and cross T's, and you just were sold? And was there an economic shift?
You mean, was I a soft touch?
Yeah,
very soft.
So there was no due diligence on the partner?
No.
Okay.
Other than I just built this house. Look at it. It's cool.
Yeah.
And this is how I did it. And this is how much I built
it. Paul, I have a deal for you.
Too trusting.
I'm letting
Trevor's got one for you.
I got a deal for you right now. I need $1 million though. you think you can get that?
He's going to have to go borrow it.
How confident?
Dave has passed away.
100% confident.
Oh, your sugar daddy passed away? Sad.
Or you could call him.
So, Paul, I think this deal's not that bad. I think you have a worse deal you can tell us about that hurt more than this.
No, that hurt.
I don't know. I'm not feeling it from you. I think there's a bigger one. You probably know of bigger ones.
Well, I know of things that he's invested in where he lost more than that, yes. But they're not.
But they always worked out because I had the tangible asset behind it.
Yeah.
Here I didn't.
So in this case, did you lose the full $1 million? And just because you guys didn't sell, like, couldn't you guys have built these things, refinanced them, had them as rentals, and it all would have been fine?
It didn't work out that
way.
It's not an investment. It's a development company. And that's what people, I don't think, understand is up until you have a finished product, all you're doing is spending. And there's nothing to value. There's nothing to borrow against. There's nothing to sell. And if you can't complete the project, you literally have nothing.
Mm-hmm.
That's perfect.
But your house has got finished.
That's perfect.
Did your houses get finished that he was building?
Well, some did and some didn't.
And did the ones that got finished get sold? They just didn't get sold for enough?
Well, and then when we walked away from it, we had modular homes just sitting there, not on pads or not finished.
Oh, I see. So, and you said this company went bankrupt that you guys had?
Yeah.
How does that affect you when personally as being an owner in the company? Or were you not an owner in the company?
Well, I never personally went bankrupt, you understand.
The business went bankrupt.
The business did.
Yes.
Yeah. So does that doesn't really matter then at that point? Because like Donald Trump has businesses that go bankrupt all the time.
Yeah.
How does that work?
Yeah, but it does matter.
It does matter. How does it matter?
Well, it doesn't show up anymore. That's how it matters. And when they ask you the question, you got to read the question. Have you ever been bankrupt? I haven't.
That company was.
Yeah. Got to ask the question.
Right. And so like your question on Donald Trump is because he doesn't go bankrupt. The company's going solvent. So it's just asset protection to keep you distanced from it.
Gotcha. And then you just personally refied some properties to pay this back due to his $1 million or all kinds cash flow?
Yeah. All kinds of ways. I was giving him big checks, little checks.
Did you have to sell anything?
I don't remember doing that so much. But refinance.
Did you like give him any collateral? Say, hey, I'm going to.
I just gave him checks.
Just checks.
So after you got out of your lane, you're going to build some stuff. You're going to borrow money. After that, it sounds like you borrowed money from him again, but you went out and bought real estate with it.
Tangible assets. Bought Fisher Court Apartments.
So did you ever make.
I still have it.
You want to sell it? Did you ever make that same mistake again? I mean, you got out of your lane again. We know you got out of your lane because you told us you went out and bought 6 ranches. But did you ever get out of, did you ever get into another bad partnership or get out of your lane like that into development again? Or did you learn from that mistake and just say, that's not for me. That's not the direction I'm supposed to go.
I like to think I learned from my mistakes. I stuck with practical residential real estate, something that everybody needs to live. Everybody's got to have a place to live. And this is not the Taj Mahal. This is just basic bread and butter stuff. And in a recession, we even look the other way if they bring in their roommates. So you can't go wrong with that. Oh, during a recession, that type of real estate always does well, or at least to survive.
This is another Paul Curley, the spiritual part of real estate. Is ego is the antithesis to success in real estate. So in watching the way Paul's head works and the kind of buildings that he buys, we talked about this a little bit in the last episode, is, you know, most of us, when we drive around, we look at buildings that we want to own. You wouldn't maybe decide, you wouldn't pick out all of the properties that Paul owns and say, this is what I would like to say. You're never going to go to dinner with your friends and go hop in the car and say, let me drive you by this building I own. Ego is literally the way you lose money in real estate. It is absolutely the opposite way to make money. So to watch Paul, and it took me a while to really pick up on, but you know, I mean, it's almost like the worse shape that it's in when you buy it, obviously the better the deal you might get, but you can't let your ego get in the way. And I've seen a lot of new investors come in and we're showing them a unit and you walk in and they like their eyes kind of get big and they go like, oh, I don't want to own something I wouldn't live in, you know? And I feel, because of what Paul has taught me, just the exact opposite. I would never own something that I would live in other than my house. That's why I have a house.
So how do you guys keep your egos in check? Because you're worth $200 million. Like Gabe, you're a celebrity in the area. Even Mike, you've been on Bigger Pockets, dude. You're a celebrity, real estate celebrity too. Like, how do you guys keep your egos in check? Because people think you're cool. You're buying all this real estate. It's awesome. They come up, ask you all the questions. They praise you. How do you keep your ego in check?
I'm still trying to make cash flow. That keeps your ego in check.
Load yourself up with debt.
Well, and you might be going after a different prize. Like if you're an average person who wants to, you know, to feed your ego, it might be about owning the coolest looking building on the street. Whereas to Paul and I think our ego is fed more by, I just stacked another asset on my schedule of real estate. And it, I never want to go drive by it or take somebody by it or take pictures of it, or it's maybe it feeds a different part of the ego where the excitement happens to us on a financial statement.
You measure yourself in a different way than by what your portfolio is.
Good way to say it.
Yeah, good way to.
The other thing I was going to, from a tangible standpoint, I never forget that I'm human. I think that's the easiest thing is I may do this one thing well. There's so many areas I just am just a fucking human.
Suck at.
Yeah. And so it's the opposite of the gap in the game mentality, but you use it, you frame it to help you. Does that make sense? So I look at the gap to help me realize I've just gained in this one area and I still have so much more gain to go. But I don't let that gap bring me down. I just look, we're all human. We all make mistakes.
In AA, we call that taking your inventory. You have to line up the positive and the negative and be able to look at yourself in the mirror and see what's actually going on.
Yeah, right? Realist. Yeah, like I'm not an optimist by any means. I'm a realist that likes to think positively.
How do you keep your ego out of it, Paul? You said just the cash flow.
I know for a fact, if I don't have my head and my heart in it, I'm incompetent.
Let me ask.
I'll keep you home.
Ooh, that's a pass. Ooh, I like that. It doesn't matter if you're competent. If your head and heart aren't in it, you will bring incompetency to the table.
And lack of positive thinking and
awareness.
So yeah. I got a question. So you say like you go through these hard times and it always works out because it has to, and you're being positive and whatnot. Do you think, and Gabe's done the same thing, do you think you two are anomalies in that situation? There's just tons of people who go through the same thing and it's just all downhill even though they try to be positive, or do you think it's truly because they are not, their head is not in the right place?
It depends on your personality, what you want out of life. Some of them don't want what we have, which is not bad. They want a simpler, easier life. Most people do.
Mm-hmm. I'd say that's true.
Is that fair?
Yeah. Yeah, what we do is not easy.
I think a lot of people do things that are hard and then veil that in, we're working for an easier life as well.
Yeah, we want life to be better. But Paul and I, like he said before, we got a screw loose and we play this game because we're addicted to it. We're deal junkies. But I will say, going back to the ego piece about Paul, and I've had to pull a lot of stuff out of Paul because he didn't even know why he did some of the things that he did. So I was very much like what Trevor is to me, I was to Paul. And just every week I'm grilling, I've got 100 questions for Paul that I want to ask. And so one day we're going for a walk over the new taco bridge they built down here in downtown Salem, and I'm asking him, like, what if you're wrong? What if things go wrong? What if the values go down? What if the rents go down? What if you lose it all? What if you over leverage? And I'm just grilling him over and over and over and over and over. And finally he just stopped and he says, well, if that happens, then it's just going to be a lifetime of work down the drain. And so I said, so how do you manage that risk? How do you decide to go forward? And his answer to me, I'll never forget. He says, if I don't do it, I won't respect myself. Mm. Paul is not out building his empire to make us get excited about it and for us to look up to him as a legend in real estate. He never did any of this for us. He did it so he can look in the mirror and respect himself.
It's an internal identity. I love that. And you think about, a lot of people commit suicide after recessions in the development world. And part of that's because their identity is wrapped up in what they're doing, where your identity is wrapped up with your conversation you're having from a productivity standpoint. That's what I'm seeing and reading between the lines.
No, it makes sense. Yeah. What a way to express it. Wow. Interesting conversation.
You want to get out of your lane again? You want to go do some deals outside of your lane? You just want to stay in your lane now?
No.
What is your lane, by the way? Are you just a... Are you still a real estate guy? Are you a rancher? Are you what?
What's cow guy?
So you, where you're having fun right now,
where
is
you started.
You going back to your roots?
How fun!
Yeah.
I got this spastic horse that I just love to ride.
And last week you told me you bought a lot of cows. How many cows did you buy last week?
516 head of heifers.
516 cows. That's a lot of cows.
Well, it turns out in in the ranch world, it really is.
So you are a big shot. In ranching, do you want to be a big shot, or is this also a look in the mirror and respect yourself thing?
Well, I got an opportunity to grow the ranching, and I've got some good people, so I am working about growing it. Where it goes, I don't know.
Why do you want to grow it?
It's more fun than being here on concrete and pavement all the time.
But you can go over there and have one cow and be in the dirt. You don't have to have thousands of cows to be out in the wild, do you?
Boy, that's a deep question. I don't know that I have the answer to. It's kind of like owning more than one apartment complex. Why do you need that? Well, I don't really know. It's just...
You were put on this earth to build an empire. And no matter what it is you're doing, you're going big. You're building it and building it and building it, because that's what gets you excited.
I've building a base on this ranch thing that I think has got the potential to get big. I really do.
And you want it to be
big. I think I got the right people. I made all the mistakes with the wrong partners. Actually, I'm partnering up. He's taught me that it can work.
So you got out of your lane again. You got some bad partners. You lost some money, but now you own all these ranches, and so you got to grow out of it.
I'm going to grow out of it.
So
I've learned some ideas how to do that.
So if we went back in time to 2019, before Yellowstone came out, and I told you, don't ever watch this show, would that have changed things? Like, would today you still be going, you know what, I really wish I could get off of concrete and go play with cows and horses?
Well, the show didn't have anything to do with it. The opportunities came by, and I just, you know, I'm a deal junkie. Well, yeah, okay.
You're going, but you also had three cows that got stolen from you. You had to make up for. There's some subconscious stuff going in there.
And these guys are even talking about purebred registered Black Angus cows. And I'd long since forgot that until they mentioned, I used to have three of them.
So,
wow.
Am I hearing correctly? You're choosing to grow out of this by growing this lane. You got into a different lane, and you're just making that bigger now?
Yeah. Oh, that takes guts.
Yeah, this is great. This isn't guts. This is.
I'm in trouble, whether it's apartments or whatever, and to spend more money and get bigger at what's hurting you right now takes guts.
To grow out
of it. But I got a plan that I think makes sense.
You have faith.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
This is one of your spiritual principles is you got to grow out of it. You can't go crawl in a hole and die, which you did with your developer partner when you guys couldn't get your modular homes sold.
Well, that was a little...
Now you got a bad partner, you borrow money, you can't get it done, you just give up.
Like Mike says, it wasn't done. I didn't have anything to work with. Just pissed away money.
But in the ranches, you have something to work with.
Either.
In the ranching, I think I can develop a base to grow out of it.
But if you had started with ranching, you'd never be who you are today. It took grubby little apartment units, one by one, inching it along for decades, living way below your means, living in one of your... When I met Paul, he was living in one of his fourplexes. I met Paul 12 years ago. He's 74. So he's in his 60s. He's still living in one of his fourplexes.
He's collecting SSI, living in his own fourplex.
He looks at me and he goes, when I was your age, I was never doing the things that you're doing. I look at Trevor and I go, I was Trevor's age, I couldn't even have dreamed of doing the things that
you
Trevor's
guys are
doing
so far ahead of where I was at your age. It's amazing. I didn't hit the ground running until I was 40.
Think of all that time you wasted to being an attorney.
But think of what he learned.
Yeah. Well, and I was really biting my lip because we love to make fun of realtors because they go through all this education, which isn't education. It's all law. It's ownership oriented, but it's the best education for being a really good real estate investor. So we poo-poo this whole industry like they don't even get educated. But when you're a master, you look back and you go, that is actually what I wanted to know, is what is deeds? How do you control ownership? How do you split ownership? How do you create partnerships that make sense? That's all legal work.
It's a heck of a base.
Yes. Yeah.
I'm curious what you do your day to day. Like, are you just doing deals and working all day now? Or do you go on vacation? Like,
no, I'm trying to make sure. I'm just trying to watch the cash flow. And then I go to the ranch and enjoy hanging out there. And
Your apartments by week and ranch by weekend.
So are you able to, let's say you're maybe not right now or maybe right now, you're having problems that you're trying to solve. Are you able to disconnect from that problem and stop thinking about it and go enjoy that ranch? Or is it in the back of your mind always like, I have this problem?
You got to disconnect. Solve?
How do you do that?
Fill yourself up with something else that's more fun. This crazy horse.
Why are you pointing at Mike when you say that?
I'm a crazy horse.
Well, he would understand.
I look like a
he's older. He's older than you are.
Yeah. So you're able to block it out
to a point. Yeah,
you're not out riding the horse.
And I have faith that this will work out. And my crystal ball says we're going to get an explosion in real estate prices. That means we're going to get the rents are going to start going up again, and then the values will follow. So my crystal ball says in time, things will be full and really humming.
How far away is that? How far does your crystal ball hone in on what year this is going to happen?
Well, I'm hoping a good 18 months yet.
Oh, you don't think we're coming back till end of next year?
Well, at least middle of next year.
But are you going to start seeing signs of that now, or do we have another year of pain?
Well, I think there's signs now.
So things are going to start filling up now. Rates will come down a little bit. Rents will start to pick up again. And that's just a feeling. That's not based in any studies.
All these other recessions, the down part seems to last for a couple of years. And then the up part is real low key and real subtle. You don't even know what's happening, but that's kind of a couple of years.
Well, so we're definitely 2 years around. In.
I think we're turning around and we're heading in.
And it happens overnight when it does turn.
Oh, good God, does it ever.
Yeah.
So
that's why you got to have your base.
In real estate, historically, the downside does not happen overnight. That happens longer. And then it's the upside that happens overnight because the monetary policy changes overnight to improve us.
And the way I express it, they're printing money, but it hasn't had a chance to settle into the system. Kind of all settles in the system at once on the upside.
Yeah. And there's two ways to. There's two printing presses. There's the political printing press, which is our government spending, and then there's the Fed banking level. And as we've been pulling money out of the economy, the M2 supply, by reducing the Fed balance sheet, we've just created more spending at the political side that hasn't actually hit the system yet. And so when we talk about printing, it's really easy for someone to get confused or just disoriented on, well, what are we printing? Because even though we're printing at the Fed level, we're shrinking the balance sheet, pulling money out, but we're setting up the printing presses on the political side. So it's a smoke and mirrors thing.
You guys are both saying the same thing.
Yeah.
Two different ways.
I'd also argue with
you. I simplify it quite a bit. I'm a simple guy, so.
Have you?
Sounds pretty simple.
Yeah. When you're also talking right now about being in a recession, I disagree that it's like a contraction recession. It isn't sales volume. And so what I heard you expressed in rents are down. And I don't think that's a recessionary and economic thing. I think that is a cycle thing of where your assets are located based in the regional development pattern. Because I'm not feeling that in Portland. And we're essentially 6 years ahead of your...
But you're smallplex. That's part of the difference.
Are you saying you're full in Portland?
Yeah.
Well, that's nice to know.
We're smallplex, so that's different. I think probably some of that's asset class because we're more A and B asset class. And so you'll feel it more in this. But I still think that is more... Because incomes are not down. And so I think it's more of a cycle thing that you're feeling.
I think from a vacancy standpoint, we've had more inventory. We've talked a little bit about the eviction moratorium came to an end. Yeah. Right when a lot of the units came out of the ground that were going to be delivered in 2021, 22, they all came at once, right about the same time that eviction moratorium ended. And so we ended up with more available units all at once, supply and demand. You just have a higher supply of units. We have to work through that, which I think we are. And we're coming sort of to the end of that part of the cycle.
Yes.
Development cycle that you're talking about. And then we come out of that. And I think that sorts itself out. Going back to your conversation about contraction and recession, we don't have a recession in in the whole country, perhaps, but we have it maybe in real estate. And in residential real estate, the values have maintained because of supply and demand. But in the commercial world, we don't really know yet. We still, when we talk about price discovery, mm-hmm. a cap rate, you know, cap rates have gone up. They've expanded. Interest rates have gone up. And I was listening to Jamie Dimon talk the other day, and he goes, well, it's simple. When interest rates go up 3%, the value of your commercial real estate goes down 30%. That's just the way it works. So if you've got $1 million building, now you got a $700,000 building. Well, to a commercial investor like us, we don't really care. It just means we get to go buy more real estate at a discount because we're not going to sell our asset unless we have to. And so you don't see hardly anybody selling because they know that we're in a contraction. And so a lot of those losses just aren't really materializing in the market. So if everybody had to sell today, you'd go, holy crap.
Because
residential stayed up here, but commercial dropped 30%.
Because commercial, I'd argue residential did fall. It just didn't fall quickly because we didn't, commercial didn't have the price. The price discovery that we had in the residential side. But, and the reason you didn't is because commercial is financially driven where residential is event driven.
Exactly. Yeah. Different buyer.
Yes. And why I brought this up was to actually emphasize your point that in the valley, that match will get lit because you're on the downside of this weird supply and demand equilibrium, abnormal lack of equilibrium that we got out of it because of non-financial things, non-economical things. It's more production and law
mm-hmm.
written things. And so it keeps your incomes down when they really shouldn't be from a rent standpoint because vacancy's higher. So your rents are down, but that's artificially not due to economics. It's not due to income. It's due to policies. And so you're on the back end of that when monetary policy is going to change. And so the monetary policy is going to work with you as you got down through that higher supply than demand cycle in your regional marketplace. Does that make sense?
We're not as smart as you, Mike.
I'm just justifying myself to go
this is where
capital my apartments down here.
This is where Paul says it's all bullshit. Just go buy more real estate.
They're just printing money.
Did I just go Trevor on you?
But to both of your points.
But you're saying the same thing.
The market's going to come
breaking
back.
Breaking it down more. It's a different. I understand it more.
Well, yeah. Mike is adding a more scientific touch. He claims to be a real estate artist. I think Paul is a real estate artist. I think you're more scientific.
I think today proves the fact that I'm way more scientific than I want to admit.
Yeah, yeah. But you are putting it, for those that are listening that want to be more scientific about it, it is a little easier to digest that information, I think, when it's backed by, I've studied this and I've looked at the market and this is why I think the market's gonna bounce back, versus Paul, who I just say, trust Paul because he's always right. And he goes, I can't tell you why. I just know that this is how it works and it's gonna come back and it's gonna. So the cool thing is you guys are both saying we're gonna have an explosion of values. The negative I take from that is that means we got to go out and really start hustling to get our name on doors because we want to catch this run up, this next run up before it hits. And this is for everybody listening. This is where it happens. This is where the magic happens. You get a few chances like this in your life to really build your net worth. And this is one of those times. So I would say get really serious about figuring out what your business model is and getting your name on some real estate.
Buying opportunity of a lifetime. You just got to have the guts to step out when nobody else is, and the system is lying to you about how bad things are.
And to piggyback on what both of you said, I think the buying opportunity of a lifetime was 2010, 11, and 12. But
it really was.
But it happens again. Yeah. It happens in cycles, right?
Yeah. So anecdotally, I am right now really excited because I'm not getting out of the residential world, but I just did really good on the buying opportunity in the residential side. That's closing as the buying opportunity is opening on the commercial side.
Yeah.
So it's a great time to start changing my identity of being the small plex guy now getting into the commercial world and ride that wave.
Are you talking about apartment, office buildings? What do you call
commercial debt. So 5+ unit apartments. So residential at the 5+ level because of the debt side. So I think there's a couple asset classes, retail, office, Airbnb, if you want to get into that, hotels. But the commercial asset world is driven so much by the lending, where other assets were the, say, for example, the commercial space in downtown Portland right now is absolutely effed. And because of the terrible...
Is that true, Paul?
I can't imagine.
Yeah. So because now what the problem there is, that affects the balance sheets for our community banks. And so now our community banks struggle making loans. It does not even just in commercial, but just loans in general. So then that commercial world pulls down on the 5 to 10 unit residential world as well. And so by association, because that lending, the balance sheets of the banks are all messed up, you're going to peel off some really good residential assets that have no problem with them other than the fact that their commercial banking program in their city brings their values down in this little time period that won't exist 5 years from now.
So is the balance sheet of the bank actually messed up though in that case if they're still taking payments? Because they're not going to...
They're not... Well, yeah. So the extend and pretend model has been working for them.
Yeah, they're just leaving the value there. They have that collateral, that note.
Yeah. And so that's now it's deposit driven. That's where deposits come into the world now. And cash has been taken out of deposits and put into market rate, say like market money market accounts. So if we don't have an increase of deposits, though, that's the problem. And I think that when we talk about interest rates being so rates higher for longer, that is the thought process, is that puts us into a contracting economy, lower incomes, less savings, less deposits, which then now combine fewer deposits with a pretend and extend and pretend mentality creates this world that potentially blows up.
So it's interesting how you talked about how commercial real estate is so sensitive to the lending environment. And for us in commercial, it's not really even rate driven. What happens, you know, Paul just said, when nobody else is buying, that's when you should buy. But here's the problem. The reason why nobody's buying is because the banks aren't lending.
At the bottom, the banks always stop lending at the bottom.
So this is why, this is what causes the dip in the demand to buy commercial real estate. It isn't that there aren't people out there that still want to make money on buying deals. It's that there's nobody that will loan them the money to go do the deal. So you not only have to have the guts that Paul's talking about, you also have to have the brains to figure out how to go finance that deal. Because if you walk into your credit union, your bank today, and you say, I want to go buy that deal, it doesn't matter what the rates are. They're just going to say, we're not lending right now. Or they're going to go, hey, sure. I talked to one lender. I said, so give me an idea. If I want to buy $1 million building, what's my LTV? They said, we'll probably loan you about 500K. So I got to come up with 500 grand. They said, yeah, but there's an asterisk on that. You have to also deposit with us $250,000. So what you're telling me is if I want to buy $1 million deal, I have to have $750,000 cash.
Yep. And the last interview with Mark last week is a great example of that, right? He went from a 90% loan to cost offer from a bank to a 70% loan to cost.
Yeah.
So you now have to have outside resources to bring into the deal. So you have to have the mindset and the capability to make the pie bigger to attract other resources because your typical resources no longer work.
One thing about Fannie Mae loans, when we're in these recessions and the banks wouldn't would not loan, Fannie Mae will, the government will always loan money to you on apartments.
They're still, they're even weird right now.
That was my surviving. I didn't have office buildings in those days. I had just had all these apartments that were coming up and I would refinance them and I'd always take money out even in the recession with Fannie Mae.
When's the last time you closed a Fannie Mae loan?
Maybe a few months ago. I've got so many Fannie Mae loans that are coming up, I'm always refinancing.
And they call you because you're a great borrower, but are they acting weird or are they seeming pretty normal to you? Because I'm doing a deal right now on a Fannie loan and they're acting a little strange on us right now.
Who
as
are you
of
talking
today
to?
I'm not talking to anybody. I'm representing the buyer. I'm just the broker.
I got some,
but these are big shots. These are guys that own tens of thousands of doors.
Well, they wouldn't know where to go.
Yeah. They've got good people, but Fannie's acting a little strange. Like they're just a little more conservative, I guess you'd
I say. Haven't had that problem.
All right.
It's weird to think about because they don't think in terms of economics. They think in terms of creating housing.
Yeah, exactly. They're driven by a different mission.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wanted you to close it out with the spiritual principles of real estate. Is there a list of these? Like, yeah, I hear you.
No, but you should make a list. Every time I say one, you should write it down. I mean, this is really what we talk about all the time. I mean, forget the art and the science. We really get into the spiritual side of real estate and how the energy of a deal and the our energy and putting out, you know, I always tell you guys to manifest these deals and manifest the money, whatever it is that you want. I get all this from Paul.
Yeah.
That word manifest, you don't hear that anywhere.
Yeah.
But I got that from the Eastern philosophy. Magnetize. No, the word is magnetized to you. I even lost my own trainer. My own bullshit. Magnetizes to you.
You have to energize.
It's positive thinking. But I bit it twice. It's just not enough to think positive. You got to keep your energy up. Because if you lower your energy, then the little doubt will start nagging at you, even if you're being positive. I almost went bankrupt the second time. Well, I'm still positive. How in the hell does this happen? Well, I didn't keep my energy up. I didn't keep excited about what I was doing. I was getting bored with it. It was certain parts of it are not as fun as others, a little irritating. But now, checks in the mail. That means I'm still in the game. Yes. Let me get it out of you.
Well, here's a spiritual question for you. Does the game ever end?
That's when the game ends, life is over.
Yeah.
Paul and I joked that on our deathbed, we'll be laying in the hospital and the nurse will hand us an iPad to DocuSign our last closing statement. So that's the goal, is to die doing a deal.
You still have power of attorney at that time?
Yeah, some people want to die, you know, in retirement or having sex or doing something else cool. We want to die doing a deal.
Yeah.
A big, juicy deal. That'll make our heirs a lot of money.
You're not going to want to sign it in the hospital. They'll will you into the title company. You can sign and then die there.
By then, we'll have a neural link from Elon Musk mounted into our brains, and we won't have to DocuSign anymore. We'll be able to just buy deals everywhere we're at just by thinking about it.
Yeah, but you guys are old enough that the nostalgia, you'll want to get in that building.
We might even sign it with a pen and paper just to feel really old.
Just think about it. People 10 years younger, they're never going to go to a title office. They're never going to know what it's like to sign a deal in person.
Yeah, once we go to digital notaries and blockchain and all that, it'll change.
Sorry.
Well, are we...
And you're making me feel old. Well, I can remember not even having a fax machine. You'd send out an offer, and because the communication was so slow in those days, you'd sit there for a week wondering how things went. No cell phones.
How'd you send it out? By mail? Mail offers, or was it like a courier that took it somewhere?
I think you did. You sent it out by, I think so. And you waited for the mail.
There was no like courier pigeon or a guy riding a horse that delivered the mail or anything like that.
But it just seemed like, as the system sped up, you got better and better, faster communication. You didn't wait. But I can remember in the old days having to wait for my excited offer.
It's one thing that these, you know, the younger guys in the room like Trevor, who have the technology at your fingertips, we can do a lot more deals now than we could do back then.
Instantly. But if I remember, I would send it out, and then they would mail it back to me.
You sit and wait for the mail to come in. Well, we're going to wrap up this episode. Paul, it's been great having you on the show. We always learn a lot from you, and we hope we can have you back on one day, and we'll dig even deeper into some other spiritual principles. Trevor's going to write down all these spiritual principles, and we'll do a whole episode just about Paul Curley's spiritual principles of real estate. Thanks for listening. We had a lot of fun recording this for you. We hope you're enjoying this podcast, and we'll see you next time.